All right, everybody, welcome to Troubadour Podcast. Today, I've got Stuart Margolis. But am I saying your name correctly, your last name? Margolis.
No, you actually said it right Margolis. The first time. But professionally, I go by Stuart Wade. My full legal name is Stuart Wade Margolis, and that's just way too long. So I go by Stuart Wade in my movie career.
Okay. Like but,
yeah.
Wade Hatton. That's an old Western guy's name. I don't know why that makes me think of Wade Hatton. I love Westerns.
I guess you do. Yeah, I'm not even familiar with him, but yeah.
The Hattons. I feel like I'm drawing a blank on exactly what movie it was. It might have been Dodge City with Errol Flynn. But anyway, I think he might have played Wade Hatton. But if I'm wrong, someone correct me by telling me who it is, or we'll look it up on IMDb later. But Stuart Wade... although your name says Margolis on there, so I apologize. I should have checked more.
I'm both. I'm a dual personality.
All right, and that's going to be a good theme in our show today, because you are a director and a producer. You've directed a movie that just came out recently, correct?
Just a
couple weeks ago, called Say Yes. So there is a poster here. And we're going to watch a trailer in a few minutes. And it's a very interesting theme and subject matter, very controversial. So today we're going to be talking about things like sexuality, our culture, and how we deal with sexuality. I think we'll probably talk a little bit about repression, which if you follow the show, I've talked quite a bit about, actually. I think repression is a very harmful thing in general, and it's something we need to, as a culture, kind of better confront if we're going to, as individuals within the culture, grow and be better. So, you know, why don't we get started? Or actually, before I show the trailer clip, Stuart, do you want to give a quick little snippet about your background in directing and producing and what you've done?
Okay, sure. I actually, you left out, I think of my main identity as a writer. My background is in writing. I have a very, very useful degree in playwriting, both the undergraduate and the graduate degree. You probably didn't even know they gave degrees in playwriting, but they do. So I started out in theater in writing plays, and my last year of grad school, I kind of discovered that nobody makes a living in the theater in America. So I'd always been interested in film, and I started writing movies. And initially, the first like 15 years of my career, I was just a struggling screenwriter, and I did sell one script and had it made overseas, but
that's awesome.
Yeah, it was very cool. They flew me to Munich, Germany. I spent a couple weeks there rewriting. It was so much fun. But at the end of the day, after promising me they wouldn't change a word, they were translating it to German, but the director added this whole dream sequence that had nothing to do with my movie and that was very bizarre. And it turned out, like I found out years later, it was the whole purpose of it was commenting on some current political scandal that was happening. Mm-hmm. Had nothing to do with my movie. It was just an excuse to put this in.
Propaganda.
Exactly. And it's just frustrating. And as a writer, you don't have any control. So I went back to school and studied film directing and started directing my own things. And I've been at it now since 2000. So that's been a while.
All right. That's awesome. Yeah. I don't know if you and I met at, an institute, a nonprofit. I don't know if you want to mention it or not. I don't know if it matters, but we met at an institute. We worked together in an office.
Yes.
And, you know, I had gone through film school, so I had a film degree. So I've written scripts and stuff, and I'm in the process of writing my first script that I'm really writing it for the purpose of selling. For the first time. Like in the past, you know, it's just kind of to write because I wanted to write. Exactly. But now I'm trying to think about the market a little bit more and you know, it may not be the best way sometimes, but I'm going to try anyway.
Yeah.
So anyway, at some point, maybe, you know, after we talk about your film a little bit, you could tell me more about how you sold your first script, because I know there are writers in that watch, and there's quite a few actually in the community of Troubadour. It's for writers and creators. So anyway, you know, so thank you for the background. That's interesting. I know the big one, of course, though, that you didn't mention is you did work with Lance Bass, I noticed.
I did.
Lance, and a couple other cool big hitters. The guy from The Office.
Two big music, you know, Lance, of course, is not really known as an actor. He's known as a musician. And I also, on a previous film, had worked with Debbie Gibson, also mostly known. She's probably a little before your time, but she was huge back in the 80s and is incredibly talented, both as a singer-songwriter and as an actress. So, I've worked with a few interesting people over the years.
I mean, that's one of the cool things. I mean, you live in Southern California, so you're, like, in that world, and that's awesome. I'm in Northern California. I need to maybe make my way down.
Well, if you want to, you know, be really immersed in the entertainment industry, obviously this is the center of it. So, but, you know, you can also do a lot from remote and just coming into town when necessary.
With my bear rug. That's what I'm trying to do.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's watch this clip or this trailer, I should say. This is the trailer.
Yeah,
Our sound won't be off, so we'll have to be quiet for just a minute or two. I don't know if you'll be able to see it, actually.
But oh, okay.
They will. So I'll just have to let you know when it's done.
Okay, good. Yes.
Okay, so let's go ahead and watch this. This is Say Yes.
You know, it would make me really happy if you and Caden got together.
Very funny.
He seems like a good guy. He's just a bit conventional.
You think I'm attracted to him?
You're not.
You are beautiful.
You ever think about posing nude?
Ow! Oh!
I'm straight and in love with you.
Human sexuality is so much more complex than man or woman, gay or straight, either or.
I can't talk to you when you're naked.
Promise me. You're gonna make your decisions out of love, not fear.
But it is safest if I try to deny this, then watch it unfold, then to watch it unfold. But I know enough, I'm longing for your touch, and I think, oh. Just a little bit of breath and sound. Just a little bit of reaching now.
We are okay. We're back. Sorry, I had my muted. So I imagine you know what that trailer was because you made it.
Yes, I'm familiar with it.
So I said that this show might be about sexuality because we're going to talk about the movie, and you know, the movie is about a trio. It's a tryst movie about a straight man who falls in love with a woman, a very wild, rambunctious kind of woman, and they get married, they live happily, and then she gets cancer, and then you know, as she's passing, she wants him, you know, he starts to fall in love or have weird mixed feelings, I should say, about her brother who moves in with them to help her in her convalescence. So it's an interesting struggle, and it's, you know, between these three characters, it's mostly those three characters. I think the only other characters are the mother and father, and then like there's a bevy of people at the beginning, friends,
right? And there's the
including
doctor,
you.
But
I spotted you.
Yes, I'm an extra.
So,
Alfred Hitchcock.
Little Alfred Hitchcock. Do you do that on all your movies?
I try to. Yeah.
Okay. So cool. So
it's not so much an artistic thing as, you know, then I don't have to worry about, that's one less extra to worry about.
Yeah.
Wrangling. So.
Yeah. No, I totally get that. So that's the movie. So it's dealing with sexuality. You heard in the trailer, there was, you know, she talks about the fluidity of sexuality, which I imagine is one of the more controversial things in there that I thought we could talk about. Before we go in there, I thought, you know, you're the director. Did you produce at all, or was there another person?
I was co-producer and writer-director, yeah.
Okay, so it's your job to sell, right, to some degree, to the people. So
yes.
I'm going to – I didn't warn you about this, but I probably should have. I apologize. But I'm going to let you try this. I'm a straight guy. Mm-hmm. I watched it for the interview, but think about if I didn't watch it for the interview, what would be your sales pitch to me about this?
The straight guy.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's actually a tough one, and it's something I've thought about. I think it's definitely not going to be something that appeals to probably the average straight guy, because I think even today, I think most straight guys just would rather not think about gay issues. I mean, they may, you know, they may have gay friends, they may have gay family, but it's not something they really want to like think about or deal with in any great amount. But for people that are a little more broad-minded, or, you know, maybe younger people especially, that, you know, are not necessarily struggling with issues of sexuality, but just a little more open to thinking about issues of sexuality and to the possibility that things aren't quite as, you know, black, white, off, on with regard to that. And that's, you know, that's a kind of a new thing, this whole idea of sexual fluidity. Mm-hmm. And it's threatening not just to straight people, but I mean, I got a lot of pushback from gay people. You know, it's like,
I would have thought it would have been more the gay community.
Yeah.
I would push back, because one of the implications is that homosexuality is not a choice then.
Or that it can be a choice. Wait.
If it's fluid, it's not necessarily a choice then. Like, or I'm sorry, it is a choice. Is
it, yeah.
It seems like there's more like, sorry, I said that wrong. That's why I was confused. Yeah, it's more like, and the arc or the narrative for a while has been, it's not a choice.
Exactly.
And so now you're bringing up something that maybe it is a choice.
Yeah, and
which is an interesting.
That's what's very controversial. Yeah. Is that for years the movement, such as it is, the gay movement, has, you know, sold the narrative that we're born this way. It's, you know, it's not a choice. I think it's a lot more complex than that. I think that there are probably hereditary genetic factors that influence your sexuality. But the fact that identical twins, you know, one can be gay and one can be straight, it's clearly not all genetic. It's just not. I mean,
yeah,
because
I didn't think about
we have those twin studies, and it's very clear. But what I think is interesting is, you know, the whole notion that we have to, you know, claim that it's immutable and inborn, is, you know, that homosexuality is bad. And so, you know, but if you don't have a choice, you know, it's like, well, okay,
yeah.
It's like, you know, being crippled is bad, but you can't blame the cripples.
Well, it's like outside of the normal realm of morality is what I think the gay community was pushing for a long time.
Right. Yeah.
But they were doing it in contrast to a very particular generic morality. And you and I come from a different philosophical background.
Exactly.
So I could kind of sense that was part of what you were playing with. And I think you know, probably do that in your work a little bit more, as you work with a different concept of free will and morality than most people are used to.
Yeah, definitely.
Oh, what book was he reading when she met him? What was that?
I think that was a book, a novel that a friend of mine wrote. It's called Pacifica.
Oh, okay.
And it's not well known at all, but it's kind of a dystopian, or not a, sorry, it's a kind of utopian. These people kind of go off and form their own society on an island, and it's quite interesting. But anyway,
okay.
I thought
it might be Atlas Shrugged. That's why, because it was big and I was like, that would be interesting.
Sort of my friend's, he wrote it. I think it's his version of Atlas Shrugged.
Okay, fair enough.
He's a big fan, and but I didn't want to use Atlas Shrugged because I don't think I have permission. It's, mm-hmm. you know, you get the rights, and I wouldn't even know where to begin with that. So,
yeah, I don't. Leonard doesn't have him anymore.
It's the producer now.
Some movie producer.
Yeah, that's the movie rights, but the rights to you.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, maybe I could have just name checked it but you know, you get into also, if you show the cover, then whoever publishes it, you have to get the rights. And,
yeah. It's complicated.
It just is a whole thing, and I didn't want to deal with it.
Sorry, I didn't mean to get off track. I just,
okay.
We were talking about the philosophy, and I was like,
right.
I remember watching that, and I was looking for the cover. I was like, oh, but you cut it right before he shows the cover. I got that. Okay, so back to, you know, so there it's a controversial idea, the fluidity and choice, and there's this different morality, and you play with very unique concepts within the broader culture.
Yeah,
you know, even that's going on today, and within the gay community and the
narrative. Well, I'll tell you kind of why a couple reasons why I think that there's a validity to this idea that you know, of sexual fluidity. You know, if you're familiar at all with the Kinsey studies that were done back, I think, in the 1950s, and that have been repeated and the data.
It sounds familiar. What exactly was that?
Okay, so Kinsey was one of the, you know, sort of first people to really study sexuality. Mm-hmm. And what he found is that he created what's called the Kinsey scale. And basically, you know, most people, heterosexuals are, I think it's 0 and homosexuals is 6. And he found that most people are not the two extremes. Most people are somewhere in the middle. And in terms of behavior, you know, most people don't ever act on, you know, impulses that are not predominant. And very few people, true bisexuals, are right in the middle. But most people are, you know, sort of not quite on the edges, but not quite in the middle. And in our society, if you're, you know, 95% heterosexual, there's a lot of reasons to just be heterosexual. Hmm. And, you know, increasingly as, you know, sort of the gay movement came along, things reversed. It used to be if you had even, you know, 10% heterosexual, you would try and push yourself to not be gay. You'd try to go to that 10%. Mm-hmm. But with the gay movement, it changed, and there was a lot of pressure to declare yourself, to be part of the movement, and to say, you know, to stand up and not be wishy-washy and say, you know, I'm gay, and that's that. But the thing is that doesn't really describe the large numbers of people. So what Kinsey found is that somewhere between like 5 and 10% of people are homosexual, you know, what we would call homosexual. They, you know, have gay sex, you know, as a routine thing or part, you know, that's part of their lives. But somewhere between 30 and 40% of men in particular have had some gay experience either in adolescence or early adulthood, or have ongoing.
Well, does it thoughts, is it the fans. Same thing if it's adolescence though? Because it's like such a development thing.
It seems like.
My parents, when I was really young, caught me in the closet with a boy. You know, I was like like 4 or something. I don't know.
Right.
Like
right.
I feel like that's pretty normal.
No. Yeah. No. For 4, that's totally not.
Like no. Yeah. You know, we didn't know what we were doing, obviously.
No, not at 4, but at, you know, at 18, 19, 20.
Oh, okay, that's different.
You know what you're doing.
That's a man, really, at that point.
That's a young man, and, you know, you can argue.
It's college experimentation.
Right, and, you know, we all are aware and fairly accepting of women, you know, kind of experimenting in college. The reality is, according to these studies, men do the same thing, they just don't talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I think there's a small, you know, most people, I think by their mid 20s, you know, the brain research is, you know, by about 25, your brain is fully formed. You're kind of preset in all
your
kinds of things.
Your neocortex is all done, basically.
Exactly. Yeah. You're done. And I think for most people that includes their sexuality. Mm-hmm. But I think that for people that are in that middle range in the Kinsey scale, sometimes it takes a, you know, sort of shock to the system to change things up a little bit. And I think, like, in my movie, it's only because he's going through this trauma with his wife that he finds these feelings for a man.
These deep emotions.
These deep emotions that with another man that he never would have imagined. Why? And for him, it gets very complicated. There's all sorts of studies about this, but there's, you know, people that are exclusively attracted sexually to one sex or the other, but then there's people that are attracted emotionally, romantically. You know, they don't always overlap entirely.
That's so interesting.
Yeah.
So you mean like a straight guy would be emotionally connected to other men, but be sexually attracted to women?
Yeah.
So there's a split.
There's a split.
I'm don't know if I buy that right now. I'd be curious.
I don't think it's common, but I think it does happen. But what is common is And again, you know, you could, a lot of times people just argue, okay, well, they're closet cases, but there's a lot of men out there who are, you know, married to women and, love their lives, but love their wives, but have sex on the side with men. And a lot of the times what they report is that, you know, they're not romantically interested in men. They don't find men romantically interesting. They just find them sexually interesting.
So it's the reverse
of romance. They want a woman. So it gets complicated. And I think we've been told that it's a lot simpler than it is. I think, you know, the other thing is that for some people, it really is that simple, but I don't think for everybody.
No, I agree. And that's what the interesting thing for anybody in this movie is the experience of this one individual. And it was, by the way, the acting was incredible. The actress did a great job.
Thank you.
And the casting of the straight man looks like Don Draper.
And doesn't he?
That
I know.
Is perfect he does. For this yeah. role. So the straight guy is Don Draper, who goes through this whole, you know, although he's not quite like drawn or written as like the super hyper masculine guy. He's a little, you know, the girl approaches him. He's a little bit effeminate in certain ways, I think. You know, so if we have, you know, if we have some time in a few minutes, if you could stick around, I'd love to talk about masculinity and femininity.
Absolutely.
But on the sexuality thing, so one, I did want to say, the emotion physical split is a little confusing to me, to be honest. But, you know, like I get the idea that you can, because again, this is internal, and this is why it's really hard to have studies about something like this.
It is.
Right? Because the person may not know their own emotions themselves. So being able to analyze your own emotional responses is difficult. And, you know, for even with a professional, it's difficult. And to do it yourself is really difficult. So, you know, I just find it a little hard to believe. Like, I definitely believe 100% that there are guys who are married to women who have strong emotional connections, maybe even sexual connections, but they also have, you know, that seems like just a bisexual person who got married and is trying to fit in.
I think so.
Okay.
But there is definitely a dichotomy, and I don't think it's necessarily a healthy dichotomy, but I think it definitely does exist among some of these men anyway, between the sort of romantic love and the sexual.
Well, it seems like it's hard enough to find a romantic love, let alone to split it between the sexes.
Oh, right? I agree.
Like that seems way more difficult. I remember like there's Leonard Peikoff who, you know, so everyone knows, you know, with my Ayn Rand connection, I don't know if, you know, you're open or you talk about it much, but Leonard Peikoff was Ayn Rand's heir, and there was a podcast that somebody wrote in once. And I remember like really thinking about this. It was such a tragedy, I thought. And he said the same, you know, he talked about it in the same way, actually. And the person wrote in and said that I'm only attracted to heterosexual men. And it's in their heterosexuality that I'm actually attracted.
Yeah.
And, you know, today in the transgender movement, it seems like it's a case of a person who was maybe trapped in a woman or a man body or however they want to, you know, you know, talk about it. You know, I'm not an expert in that or anything, but it was just that idea of like being emotionally attracted to something that you don't want or that you can't have in a certain way.
And
it's, which is something that, you know, for your movie is relatable to everybody. Although it is a little bit more concrete to this, you know, specific relationship between homosexuality and heterosexuality. It's more honed in on that, I think.
Yeah.
But there is something, you know, everybody can feel in terms of unrequited love.
Oh, definitely.
Which is, you know, like just wanting something that you can't have, like falling in love with another man's wife. And you like the man especially. Like
right.
If you respect, which I've experienced on some level. I really, really fell for a girl. And I really liked her husband too. Like not sexually, but I mean, as a person, I liked him as a guy. And that was like really annoying to me, you know, to like, and we were, you know, close in our lives. So it was like kind of annoying. So that kind of thing is relatable, I think. And cause that's what's going on in here. You know, the only difference is that the wife is a free spirit, which, she would have to be. Otherwise she would inculcate, guilt into him and he wouldn't do it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think
so. She had to be in your script.
Yeah, no, she had to be the kind of character that she is, or he wouldn't have been able to kind of discover that part of himself or feel free. You know, you talked about repression. You know, my take on the character is that he's probably, you know, one of those 90-10 people that, you know, he's 90% heterosexual. And in our society, he would always have just repressed that gay part of himself because it's just so much easier not to deal with. And it's only in this sort of extraordinary circumstance that he's able to, you know, kind of open up enough to let that 10% in.
Well, I'm a big like reader of the ancient Greeks, and you know, I'm sure you're familiar that they had a much more open idea about sexuality, and part of it was
definitely
because they revered the human body, and especially, you know, they were sexist, but especially the male body.
Yeah,
they were very much, you know, they just revered it. You know, they built their gods around it, their statues, everything was built around their love of the male form and the strength of it, its maneuverability, you know, just everything about it. And that led to a more openness about sexuality. I think a comfort in themselves. I mean, there was wrestling and you would, you know, wrestle naked and oil yourselves up. And that was a normal, you know, normal activity. But I think they had a much healthier relationship with sexuality than we do.
Oh yeah.
We've been like repressed with 2000 years of Christian thinking about, you know, the mind body split that has made us these contorted freaks sexually to some degree. And it's kind of tragic. And it's one of the things that I do think movies like this need to get out more, and we need more more art that does touch on sensuality, sexuality. And it's, you know, it's not like you're going to, I think some heterosexual men might think like they're going to be gay or something if they do. And
yeah,
I think that's a weird thought to have if someone still has that.
Yeah. It's changing very rapidly.
Yes, but, it is.
You know, when I talk to young people, it's incredible to me how different it is than when I was a kid. But still, even now, you know, there is a stigma attached to being gay, and there is this idea that, you know, it's sort of akin to the old, in the South, you know, one drop of black blood and you're black, you know, and it's sort of the same, you know, it's like one gay experience, you know, you touch another man's penis once and that's it, you're gay.
Yeah, and
you know, I think eventually if we keep moving this direction, there'll be a lot less of this idea that sexuality is so fixed. I think, you know, you'll have everyone will still have preferences. You may, you know, be mostly heterosexual or whatever, but you know, if you happen to find yourself attracted to someone of the same sex, and that's, you know, I think it more and more, I see with young people that happens, that, you know, more and more, they're open to experimentation. And even now some actors will admit, they're like, you know, oh yeah, I fooled around with my roommate in college, and it wasn't really for me. And they'll, you know, go on. And that's how it should be. It's like, you know, if you aren't coming from the religious perspective or the idea that sex is for procreation, if you really believe that, you know, sex is an expression of yourself and your sensuality and a route to, you know, connecting with another person, then a lot of the taboos start to fall away.
Well, I think you hit on it right there. I think that's the big one, is that it's, you know, just for procreation. And I think that even people who don't consciously or you know, philosophically agree with that, explicitly, we are all affected by that. And it's in your story very well, with the parents and their role, you know, in the story. And I don't want to give away everything, but you know, but there is like that kind of role going on in this world that you created. And I think it's true for sure in our own world that we, you know, even the way I've brought this issue up before, but like, you know, we watch Game of Thrones, and or, you know, now Game of Thrones makes it a little bit more okay. But it wasn't too long ago when, you know, when a boob goes on TV, people freak out.
Oh, yeah.
A nip slip. But then if you're blowing people's heads off, it's okay.
Yeah.
Right. And it's like that's and when I bring that example up all the time, and most people are like, okay, what's wrong with that? That's how ingrained it is. They can't see how that's fucking weird. Like yeah. that's not why is it okay to cut someone's head off?
Right.
And like realistically.
And show it. Yeah.
I mean, yeah, like and like blood gushing out, and that's okay. Or even exaggerate it like in Kill Bill. But one nipple and everyone flips their shit. And it's like, wait a second. Why is that like you know, that type of our relationship with sexuality is just so weird and people cannot see it right now. Or people are seeing it like more young people, like you said, are starting to see it. And
it, like I said, it's 2000 years of this kind of suppression, repression of human sexuality. And so you're not going to be able to reverse it overnight. But I think we're heading in the right direction in that area.
Yeah. And I have to be honest, because I don't want to sound like I'm some, you know, I don't know, open-minded person. It's very different. Like I'm not, you know, like I do have my faults and sometimes it's, or I don't even know if it's a fault. It's just an honest thing is I can't watch homosexual interactions. It's very difficult for me.
Oh,
this is my honest reaction. It's very difficult.
It's like
emotions I'm fine with, but once it gets into the sexual like really heavy hitting with sexuality and they're like making out and doing stuff. It's very difficult. And I don't know if that's, you know, I grew up in, you know, I was born in 85 and I, you know, played sports and there's all the sports talk about sexuality at when you're young. I don't know if that's part of it or what it is, but that's just my, even on like Game of Thrones, like, you know, there's like the sounds when he goes down on his knees and that, like, it's very difficult for me sometimes to like,
it
makes me uncomfortable and I don't get uncomfortable easily.
You're not alone. I mean, I think, you know, like anything, I think, you know, over time you'll become, you know, used to it. I mean, the first time I saw two men kiss on screen, I think was in Making Love, which you're too young to remember that, but it was a breakthrough film, on, you know, the gay storyline back in like 1980 or 81. And, you know, I remember, you know, even as a gay person being like, you know, wow, that's just so bizarre to see on screen. It just, it felt kind of weird. So, and I, you know, I certainly know you're not alone. I mean, a lot of straight men and women, I think, have that reaction.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, part of what I want to do with you and other people with this show is have these difficult and honest conversations, because like you're saying, part of the idea is that we're growing as an individual, we're growing as a culture, and we need to, you know, we're talking about like sexuality and how it impacts us. Art is a big part of that, right?
Definitely.
And that's what you created. You created art. Now, so one of the big questions is, did you create this to tell this particular story, or, you know, or is there, you know, what was your reasoning behind it? Was it to push the envelope, or did you have another reason?
The impetus for the story, it was kind of twofold. I actually read a Reddit article that I just thought was fascinating, and it was written by a man who had a straight man who had become seriously ill, like life-threatening illness, and his best friend had moved in to take care of him. Best friend also straight. And in the process of this, they had fallen in love and were still in a relationship. And it was fascinating. And I thought, that's a story that I've not seen told on film. And I didn't want to tell their exact story because I don't know them or anything. And, but I came up with it. Well, the other thing that was happening at the time is an acquaintance friend of mine, got cancer and ultimately passed away. And so having read this story and having gone through this death, kind of combined to create this storyline in my mind. I mean, I did also want to consciously kind of push the envelope a little bit because, I think it needs to be pushed. I think we still are very much constrained by what society expects of us. Mm-hmm. A lot of us, and even when we consciously know that we shouldn't be, you know, there's just so much that we grew up with, and that, you know, it's just hard to break through that. But I think you're right that art is a way that allows people to think about things a little differently and to see things they wouldn't normally see mm-hmm. and see things in a way they wouldn't normally see. So, yeah, I wanted to create a work of art that would do that for people.
I was I'm curious if you'd be interested in talking about lines.
And like specific lines in the movie?
No. No. Well, we could talk about lines in the movie for sure. If you have one, if you like. But by lines, I mean, so one of the things that I, you know, in the little that I've been following, like the transgender discussion, masculinity, femininity, sexuality right. is this idea of at some, you know, like for instance, we're told now, or the narrative is becoming more strongly, especially depending on where you're listening. If you're listening more to the left and everything, the narrative seems to be that, you know, like men, you know, like toxic masculinity and, you know, get in touch with your feminine side more, which, you know, I'm not against actually. I mean, I'm a talker. I think about people more than things. Like there's things that had generically been more feminine that I definitely take on, even though I'm like a decent sized guy. Like I still have those characteristics or whatever. You know, I'm not that great with working on, you know, my motorcycle or on anything. I can't work on stuff. Like I don't know what to do. So, you know, there's certain things that, you know, these roles are starting to be fluid a little bit more.
Yeah.
Not just the sexuality, but the roles. So,
yeah.
But my thought though, is how do you develop lines? Like, where's the line? Like you can't be, for instance, so in touch with your emotions or however you want to say it, that you're just a weeping willow, right? All the time. Like,
right.
You know, like, and you can't, you know, like a lot of, you know, there's a lot of stuff about, what's it called? I was going to say there's a word for it, asking for permission.
Consent.
Consent. Yeah. And there's a lot with that, which I get, of course, especially with Me Too and everything that's happening. We have to have good conversations about it, but there's also anybody who's had sex knows that you can't do that. Like you won't have sex if you actually say, can I do this? Can I do this? Like when I was younger, I'll just say this, like when I was younger and I did that, women didn't have sex with me and they told me later, that's why you were fucking too needy, asking for permission all the time. So it's like, and you know, so my point is that there has to be lines that we have to develop either, you know, in the culture, the lines used to be very clear cut. For better or for worse, but we knew these are the types of things you could do. There was a dark side to that, right? Like everyone talks about the dark side of the 50s where you had this picture perfect lines of this, you know, Leave It to Beaver, dad worked. But then there was like this Mad Men underpinning of depression and people beating their wives and not showing it and all that stuff, which is, so that's the bad side of having stark lines. And those weren't even that stark. Like, I think in the Middle East, it's more stark in certain So my question is, though, you do need lines on some level. You got to stop. You got to, you know, you got to be a man at some point. You got to buck up and be a man. And that's not a bad word. And so how do you develop those in this fluid world?
I certainly don't have all the answers.
Stuart, you do. Brother. Come on, man. I'm just kidding. I'm kidding.
I think that focusing, you know, I mean, I think focusing on, you know, masculine, feminine, I don't know. I think I think everybody, male or female, needs to take self-responsibility. And, you know, it may be harder for whether it's biological reasons or cultural reasons, it may be harder for women to be assertive, but they, you know, we live in a society where they are equals legally and morally. And, it, you know, so if you're with a guy and he's doing something you don't like, he shouldn't have to ask for permission. But if you say, yeah, I don't like that, stop. That's you being assertive. And then if he keeps going, then that's the line he has crossed. You know, you need to, a woman needs to, you know, be forthright about her.
Okay.
Needs.
So here's what a man might say is he might say, well, but she doesn't mean no.
Right. And that's
danger, true. Right?
But that's why I think women need to be trained to be forthright about what they want, and men need to be trained to listen and you know, respect.
Yeah.
But you know, we're not quite there yet, because as you said, a lot of women, you know, still think it's, you know, they, oh, no, stop. And then we stop, they're like, why'd you stop?
Yeah, exactly. That's happened to me as a straight guy, for sure.
Great. You know, if you want to be, you know, playing games, then, you know, sometimes someone's going to go too far. Someone's not going to realize the rules of the game.
So
it is tricky.
So there's, I mean, it is tricky. I don't know the answers either. My thought is that's in the past, one of the lines was you waited till marriage, for instance. I think that's kind of crazy.
I think that's
if you do that,
completely crazy.
I even tell people who say they're going to do that, I have no shame. I don't think it's a good idea for anybody in the world. I just don't think it's a good idea.
No. In fact, when I had kind of unusual parenting, I guess, but you know, my mom told me very young, don't you ever get married without, you know, having sex. She's like, you know, that's an important part of a relationship. You absolutely have to know what your sexual relationship is like before you get married. You can't figure it out afterwards. It doesn't work.
So I think that's a bad idea. You're taking too big of a gamble at that point.
Oh,
And then there's more of a pressure to rush too.
Yeah.
Like, I think people don't talk about that side of it, but that is a line, you know, or even, I do think there are lines that people can set, like, I don't know if I've brought this up before, but I remember watching a podcast. It might've been on Joe Rogan, and there was a comedian who was talking about, it was a comedian. He was the white guy who wrote for Dave Chappelle. I don't remember his name. He's pretty famous, but anyway, he was talking about how one of his lady friends was explaining one of her sexual encounters where she had taken a guy home and she had told him, you know, and he wanted to do anal and she said no, but he did it anyway.
Mm.
And the question is, though, she had already agreed, they were having sex and, you know, blah, blah, blah. Now, obviously, she has a right to not have that happen if she doesn't want it to.
Yeah.
But the question is, you know, on the flip side is he was in the moment, you know, his reasoning was gone. You know, when you're in the middle of sex. Now, again, I'm not trying to make excuses for him. All I'm trying to say, I want to finish before you say anything, because I don't want to get in trouble. Okay. All I wanted to say was the thing that went through my mind is, yeah, she has a right for that. But the smart thing is to get to know somebody before you bring them home. And because that's a character thing. Like, if you really, really say no, 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 and he still does it, there are indications of their character that they would be that kind of person.
Yeah.
And this is why, again, not an excuse that it's okay to do this if you do decide to have a one night stand or whatever, but it's why you, like, a line to have for everyone is not to have one night stands. Like, that's one, get to know the person, be a better judge of character.
Yeah.
You know, and at least try to be a better judge of character. And of course, if that happens, like, push them, you know, like, stop it. Like, that's a horrible thing that shouldn't happen if you say no to something like that.
Yeah.
Or anything.
So. Yeah. No, but I think, you know, I think that we each as individuals need to, you know, kind of figure out our lines. And I think that that's, personally, that's, that's one that I've always tried to adhere to. It's, you know, not having sex with people that you don't know. You know, it doesn't seem like that's a very good policy. So yeah, I think that's a good line that people need to draw.
So your characters, and I saw one of your other movies a while back. Is there a particular type of, and this isn't the first time you've had a straight man.
Right.
I remember one, there was another one. I don't know if this is common, but it seems to be at least in one that I saw years ago where there was a straight man who was convinced to be homosexual, or, you know, or at least a gay encounter, if I remember.
Right. Yeah. Coffee Date is the movie you're talking
about.
Coffee
Date. Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that did. So I don't know if that's common. I mean, the other one with Lance Bass is like, I didn't see it, but I'm going to have to watch it later tonight, I think. But it's like a mystery.
Yeah, it's a funny, it's like a screwball comedy. And it doesn't have that kind of storyline.
Seems
that
one really fun.
And I just directed. In my work as a writer, I've it's funny. Somebody asked me that at a Q&A recently because, I have tried to explore that sort of gray area a little bit. And because I do think it's, I think there's something there that needs to be explored. You know, like I said, I'm fascinated by this data that, you know, that some 30 to 40% of people have had these experiences, men have had these experiences, and but they don't talk about them. Mm-hmm. So I think that's interesting.
Well, I suspect that all men have had some kind of question in their mind on some level.
Like I think so.
We have billions of thoughts in our lives.
Exactly.
I know I have, like, I'm, you know, definitely been something I thought about in my life for sure. So I can't imagine, and I do think I'm pretty straight. Like I'm, you know, maybe who knows? Maybe I'm more fluid than I think, but I'm pretty confident in my sexual attractiveness, but or attractions. But I can't imagine that there's any guy who doesn't have it, and if he or who doesn't have those thoughts at some point.
And yeah, if they're being honest, they're not repressed.
If they're being honest with themselves, yeah. So like they might be so, you know, machismo that they're like, fuck that. And then they're like, don't be this. And they put a wall that blocks it. But any, like, I think, normal person who has a semblance of health.
Well, I think what's interesting, although obviously, you know, men and women are different, despite what some recent, you know, people on the left are trying to make everybody, you know, the same. And there are no biological differences. There are biological differences, but there are also there's a lot of crossover, you know, and I consider myself, you know, pretty strongly gay, but like I was on set, I was directing a pilot once and, there was this young woman who was she'd been a Calvin Klein model, and you know there's that look, that like really slim, and she had this really boyish haircut, but she was a girl. And anyway, there's a sex scene, and she after you know I yelled cut, she just stood up and she's walking around topless, and I'm just like, this girl is hot. She is really really sexy. Yeah, I didn't do anything. It wouldn't have been professional, if, you know, and I was in a relationship. But you know, she had, there was kind of a boyish quality to her that appealed to me as a gay man.
I see what you're saying. Yeah, yeah.
You know, but she was, you know, but she had breasts and she was a woman. She was clearly a woman.
Yeah.
And then there's this whole phenomenon, which, you know, I have to confess, I don't really understand it, but it's clearly a thing of men that are attracted to pre-op trans women. I have a friend actually who's a trans woman, and she tells me, you know, because I would have thought, oh, it must be very hard to find, you know, men that, and she's like, oh no, there are a lot of men that are really into this. I'm like, okay.
Wait, I need to get my head straight with this. So that is, that is a straight man.
Yeah.
Who's attracted to basically another man who's not had the surgery to become a woman.
Well, right, but who presents? I mean,
who wears the dress and
is, well, not just wears the. I mean, this is my friend. It's someone who's, you know, been on female hormones, has natural breasts from the hormones, but has not, you know, but still has the equipment. So and but you know, the men that want that, they want the trapping, they want the femininity, they want the softness, the things that you probably are attracted to, but somehow that plus a penis. Like I said, I don't understand it, but apparently it's a thing. Anyway, my point was that I think, you know, humans are, there's so many different, both psychological traits as well as physical traits that we each find attractive. And yeah, there, if you're honest with yourself, there's going to be times when, you know, when I see a beautiful woman that there's something about her that pushes my sexual buttons that most women don't. It happened. When I saw the Wonder Woman movie, Gail Gadot, I was like, yeah, if I were single and she were crazy enough to want to go out with me, I would do that in a heartbeat. She's, you know,
it's like
something
that.
Incredibly sexy about her.
Did you ever watch The Office?
A couple times. That wasn't a regular.
Never yeah. mind. It's one of my favorite shows. And there's this one moment when Andy is confused if he's gay, is one of the characters. Uh-huh. And there's a gay guy, Oscar Martinez, right, on the
yeah.
show.
Yeah.
And, you know, he goes to him and he tells him, like, you know, I don't know if I'm gay. And he's like telling the story, like, well, let's just say Brad Pitt were, like, you know, coming on to me and he wanted to, you know, kiss me. And, you know, I would reject him a little bit at first, but if he kept pushing on me, maybe I would say, and Oscar's like, so in this dream, Brad Pitt is, you're rejecting Brad Pitt and he's still wanting you.
And
it's like, what's my dream? You know, but it was a funny episode of, you know, someone yeah. was spreading a rumor that this character was gay.
Right.
But anyway, there was that kind of playful thing. Cause he's a very effeminate character in mm-hmm. the story.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, that's interesting to me. And so here's what I like, the things with homosexuality is not in my purview, of course, but I do see this. I have to say the closedness in our society of sexuality and not even experimenting like with different sexes, but just experiment or expanding and understanding sex is the way yeah. I would put it. Like, you know, I just have to say I've been with enough women that have told me that, you know, of their sexual experiences in the past, and it's horrifying. Like, it's just horrifying. Like,
oh, really?
You're like, yeah, you do one or two positions for years. That's it. And it's like, and it's like, you know, there's women in their 30s that they were married for like several years or something. And, you know, we're dating or something. And they just tell me, yeah, I mean, we had sex a couple times. We had a good sex life. We had sex a couple times a week. And when I dig deeper, it's like, they never did anything. You know, they never really wanted to learn or thought about learning more about sex.
Right.
And like, yeah. Well, what if you tried this? What if you tried putting food into it? What if you tried that? You know, and they're like, what? No, it's like, there's two, three positions. I was like, God, that sounds boring. Like, what?
Yeah.
And there's a lack of a desire or a lot, like there's a wall in our society, not just with homosexuality, but with heterosexuality.
Yeah, with any sort of yeah, exploration any, of sexuality.
Of just like, treating sex like it's a subject you can learn and master like any other subject, like tennis or basketball or something like that. Like, you can right. get better at sports. You can get better. So it's like, you know, getting better at sex is not just having a couple of positions with other people. It's like, you know, read books on sexuality and sex. Like, you know, I've told to a lot of guys in the past, I've recommended this book. I even bought it for people, even though they think it's weird. I brought it for my friend's 30th birthday as kind of a joke, but I was serious. And it's called, it's called She Comes First.
Ah, okay.
And, you know, I just think it's, you know, and it's about females, you know, anatomy and how it works a little bit more. And I'm like, you know, and the premise of the guy, I think it's Ian Kerner, Dr. Ian Kerner is a sex therapist. And the mm-hmm. premise is something that I totally agree with, which is, most guys know more about what's under the hood of their cars than under the hood of their wives. And I think that's accurate, but
probably accurate.
The problem isn't, you know, there's nothing innately wrong with men. It's a cultural stopping point where you know, you just know sex, right? And it's yeah. just something innate that we know what we're doing. We don't have to ask. We don't have to go look it up. We don't have to right. do something weird like that. And I think that is horrible, and maybe why everyone's so miserable in our culture. Maybe if more people had better sex, they would be, you know, better people or better able to have conversations with each other. I don't know. And they're more open with themselves. But anyway, my point was that that's a cultural wall that we have on both sides. Homosexuality, you know, not homosexuality, but what you're exploring in that gray area,
yeah.
as well as with heterosexuality.
Yeah. No, I mean, to me, it's kind of all the same issue. You know, when you look at, you know, the fundamentalist belief that, you know, oh, homosexuality is unnatural. When you actually start looking at, nature, other primates in particular, our closest genetic relatives, you know, homosexuality is it's part of the chimpanzee and bonobo society. And it's, you know, they're not necessarily like gay chimps. They're just chimps that, you know, this is just what they do for recreation. They have sex with each other.
Yeah.
You know, obviously we're not we're not chimps, and I'm not saying we should have indiscriminate sex.
No, but we're more emotionally complex, obviously.
Yeah, we're much more emotionally complex. But I think, you know, if you take out the shame and sex is dirty, sex is negative, sex is only for making babies, you know, you open up a lot of territory there. And I think a lot of potential for connection and joy. And, you know, I hope that in the future, you know, younger people especially will not be quite so hung up.
Well, it's hard to know, of course, because people don't talk about it. So right. It's hard to know unless you get really intimate with somebody and you learn. And this is, so I'm only talking like a very small, I could be wrong. I mean, everybody could be having amazing sex. My sense is that they're not.
Yeah.
But, you know, in talking to women throughout my life, the few really close friends or girlfriends that I had who would talk more explicitly about it, which is very rare. Like, yeah. So I could be very way off, but my sense has been that it hasn't been that incredible. Or even though they might think that it's incredible, it's like there's so much more you could be learning. Like, you know, buy a video that shows you different techniques and what to do, and like, you know, learn more. That's my whole thing is, you know, people learn things in every realm. Why not sex? Like, you know, they do, there's a whole bunch of romance things on how to be better in a romantic relationship.
Right.
Which is good. That's smart. Like how to find the person of your dreams, how to keep them, how to, you know, the five love languages, how to understand relationships. There's millions of things. And a lot of them in Christian section, which I find really interesting. Like if you go to the Christian section, there's a five love languages, I think is there.
Okay.
I believe, you know, there's a whole bunch of stuff on it. So they've really gotten the relationship thing on, and it's like, all right, well, how do you get your freak on, man? You gotta have some fun too, like that. And I say that jokingly, but the reality is, in my view anyway, that there's a super, you know, it's not even a super close connection. It's a completely integrated connection between the romantic side of it and the emotional side of it and the physical side, which I think is implicit in your story too.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So,
I hope that some straight men will not be scared of this movie because I think there is something there for them. And I tried to make it for everyone. You know, I tried to make a story that would appeal to, you know, to anyone with an open mind anyway.
Yeah. So, I mean, everyone check out Say Yes, give it a star rating after you watch it and enjoy it. And watch some of Stuart's other movies. And what else is on the horizon for you?
Well, currently I'm in the middle of the second season. I have a web series called Coffeehouse Chronicles, which is aimed at the LGBT community. But again, it's, you know, the stories are very accessible to everyone. That's on YouTube. And we're in the middle of the second season. So you can
go and watch
episodes. There's a trailer for the first season. We are selling and so there you can go to Amazon and see the whole first season. And there's a trailer for that on Amazon.
What's it called?
Coffee House Chronicles.
Maybe we'll watch one real quick.
Okay.
Are they short?
Well, the trailer is short. The trailer, episodes vary. But there should be a trailer that's only like, I don't know, a minute and a half, something like that.
So it's Coffee House Chronicles, the movie trailer?
Yes, that's it.
Okay. So I will, we can end here if you have to go. I don't want to keep you too long. Let me.
Okay. What time is it? Yeah, I guess it's been about an hour. Well, thank you so much for doing this. This was a lot of fun.
Okay. So before you go, though, let me show this trailer for people. So stick around, everybody. It's a quick trailer, and then we'll sign off. I just want to make sure people check out Coffee House.
Thank you, everybody. And I hope we can do this again sometime. This was a lot of fun.
Okay. So hold on 1 second before you go. Okay. I'm playing it now.
Okay.
You're a profile set graphic designer.
I'm multi-talented in all kinds of ways.
Could we find an attractive non-psycho for me to date, please?
You want to get out of here?
Neither of us are jumping into the sack tonight.
You must be kind of picky.
There's not even a checkbox for me on Match.com.
I guess a fling will do.
I'm just not into Asians.
You had me fooled.
We should do something special to mark the occasion.
Surprise me.
Well, you know, couples are extra. And there's another bump if you guys want DP.
DP?
Double penetration.
But I'm not really interested in eating women figuratively or literally.
Me either.
How was it?
The date?
It. How was it?
He was an animal, and not the good kind.
I feel kind of sorry for straight guys.
What, because we're not getting our asses pounded?
Sorry to interrupt a father-son chat.
He's not my dad.
Oh, really? We were hoping you guys were out here being intimate.
I give truly great.
So that one's definitely more directly for the LGBT community. For sure.
Yeah, definitely.
That one's much more explicitly. Say Yes is for more people, but that's good. So people can see a more broad spectrum, because a lot of people who watch the show may not be familiar with the cinema of LGBT. So
that is true.
They have one. You have Say Yes, which I think is applicable to everybody. This is still fun for everybody, I'm sure, but it is seems to be much more directed.
It's definitely aimed at the gay community, but it's also a comedy. So I saw you smiling a few times.
Yeah,
so
there's some funny moments. And there's one. What's the Asian lady that walks up? She's
Amy Hill.
Okay.
Yes.
I know
she's
her.
She's on everything. She's great.
She's everywhere. Yeah.
Yeah, she's everywhere.
I don't know. I'm trying to think. But anyway, so thank you for your time. That was fun. I hope people will watch your movie and, follow your career and keep things moving and keep asking tough questions, man.
That sounds good.
All right, take care.
Thanks, Kurt. Bye. Bye-bye.